3, 2. You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is The Public Eye. My guest this week is noted historian and best-selling author Harlow Giles Unger. His new book is Thomas Paine and the Clarion Call for American Independence. And I know for most people, Thomas Paine is not a household name. But when we think of political activism, political writers, we think that perhaps all of that started around the 1940s, 1950s. And certainly there was a proliferation of that in this country. But back in the 1700s, Thomas Paine was indeed perhaps maybe the godfather of political activism, spurring on fellow Americans, urging them for independence, and also putting forth many of his own ideas and views. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Harlow Giles Unger about the book and Mr. Paine himself. Harlow, nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be on your show.
This is, you and I talked a little bit before broadcast, and I said to you that even to my own, I consider myself a history buff, but I never thought political activism in the 1700s. Nah, they were just upset because the British were taxing them and they just wanted independence. But would it be fair to say that Thomas Paine was one of those people that motivated or spurred the colonies to rebel and maybe get us involved in the American Revolution?
No question about it. George Washington himself said that Thomas Paine had been responsible for convincing Americans on the righteousness of independence from Britain. And John Adams, our second president, said that Thomas Paine was probably the most important figure in the previous 30 years from the time of the Revolution into the first years of our federal government. He said that we should call that era not the Revolutionary War era, but the Age of Paine. That's how important the leaders of this country felt that Thomas Paine was in the success of our war for independence and the early growth of our nation. Thomas Paine, not only, as I say in the title of my book, sounded the clarion call for American independence, he sounded the clarion call for abolition, for women's rights, of all things at that time, for free public school education, which didn't exist, and for a modern concept that we didn't begin to embrace until the 1930s, he sounded the clarion call for Social Security. He was the champion of the rights of all men and women to govern themselves and to live free.
Certainly a man way ahead of his times, Harlow, no question about it. As you talked about, even that jumped off the page even when I read it. Women's rights in the 1700s, are you kidding me? So let me ask you, though, a little bit about his background. Obviously, British-born. Was he highly educated?
He educated himself, like many great men of that age. George Washington educated himself. Benjamin Franklin educated himself. They were called autodidacts. Self-educated people. And Thomas Paine came from a relatively lower middle income family. His father was a tradesman who made corset stays, the stiff whale bones that went in women's corsets. And Thomas Paine was headed in the same direction until he had to sit through Sunday after Sunday after Sunday at Quaker meeting houses, which where the congregants sat silently awaiting inspiration from God. And all that Thomas Paine could hear in that through that silence were the screams from the whipping post outside the Quaker meeting house in England, in this small town 75 miles north of London. And he was not convinced that those screams were the voice of God. And he left, he quit his father's business, and he went out and decided he needed an education. And he went and got it himself. In London, there was a free meeting place where scientists and scholars gave free lectures, and it was called the Royal Society. and they had one of the world's finest libraries with free access. And Thomas Paine began to study on his own. He studied history, he studied Greek and Roman mythology, he studied science, mechanics, electricity, engineering, those kinds of things. And he developed a skill of writing. He started writing small pieces, freelance pieces for newspapers in England. And some of his pieces began to get the attention of important figures, such as Benjamin Franklin, who was in London as the agent for Pennsylvania in Parliament, representing Pennsylvania's interests in Parliament. Those pieces got the attention of a group of workers in England who asked Paine to write a petition to Parliament asking for higher wages. And Paine wrote this beautiful, beautiful petition that got not only got the attention of Parliament, it got the attention of Franklin and other readers of the various papers that Parliament had to consider. Well, after Parliament considered it, they decided to arrest Paine for having written that petition. So now Paine was on the run, and thanks to Franklin, he was able to escape to America and get a job here in America through through Franklin's introductions. He got a job as editor of a startup magazine in Philadelphia. And one of the essays he wrote for that magazine discussed the absurdity of hereditary rule and divine right of kings, that the concept that God appointed all kings. Well, Paine said how absurd it was to put someone on the throne simply because he was born to some woman. And he called it absurd. He called it common sense that people should rule, govern themselves in a free society. And that was the title of his essay, Common Sense. It not only caught the eyes of the people in Philadelphia, which was then the capital, sort of the unofficial capital mm-hmm. of the United States.
Right.
It caught the eyes of all Americans. It sold, by the end of the year, it sold more copies of Common Sense than any other published book in the Western world other than the Bible. By the tens of thousands in America, tens of thousands of copies in England, in France, across Western Europe, across every society where divine right of kings had been the standard for centuries. And it was that came out just as the Americans were ready to declare independence. And as George Washington said, common sense convinced Americans of the justification for independence from Britain.
The way you framed all of that brings to light, because a lot of people today think of, well, you know, if you want to be a political activist or if you have some strong beliefs in an issue and you want to put that forth, with a 24/7 news cycle today, almost anybody can speak out and instantaneously at least gather or garner some kind of attention. People think, you know, who would have listened to someone? There was no television, no radio. The communications were limited. But people read fervently, at least those who could read, and obviously, based on your description, this man's writings were widely circulated, and he made quite an influence, for himself. Let me ask you. With that said, so he puts forth his views. It took a lot of courage, did it not?
It did indeed. But remember, Americans were ready for something. They had come over, the original people who landed here, they had come over and carved out farms with their own hands. They had cut down the trees, tilled the land, and had produced an agricultural society with their own hands, not and the help of God, because they were all God-fearing people. but not with any help from any nobleman, with any help from any churchman, and certainly not with any help from the king or the members of parliament. So when, after two centuries of having tamed the land, tamed the wilderness with their own two hands, suddenly these strangers come in from sent by Parliament to saying, hey, we want a share of what you're producing, and they wanted to start collecting taxes. Well, what did you do for us? was the answer. So it riled up these people across these farmlands, and they were ready for something. And Tom Paine told them what they were ready for,
yes.
And that was independence from England.
So it sounds like it was the perfect combination of gunpowder and flint to get things started.
You know, as he put it, since when does a little island have the right to govern a continent an ocean away?
Right.
That was just absurd. Again, it was not common sense. And he signed, by the way, he called that first essay Common Sense, but he signed it, not Thomas Paine, he signed it Common Sense. And everything he wrote from there on during the Revolutionary War was never signed with his name. It was signed Common Sense. So that became a rallying cry for Americans, so much so. I mean, George Washington was just taken by this this essay. And when his troops, after suffering humiliating defeats and fleeing from New York across New Jersey and across the Delaware River into Pennsylvania, and they were now encamped on the shores of the Delaware River, this was Christmas night of 1776. It was snowing. The river was half frozen with lots of chunks of ice blocking the river. And these troops were humiliated. And George Washington ordered his officers to read an essay that Thomas Paine had written. The essay began with the famous words, "These are the times that try men's souls." And it uplifted the spirit of those troops that they then crossed the Delaware with Thomas Paine among them, carrying his own musket, and went into Trenton and overwhelmed a force, a much larger force of mercenary soldiers from Germany, and won the Battle of Trenton. It changed the spirit of the country. The country was really dispirited at that time with all the military defeats. It lifted the morale of the entire country, and most important, it lifted the morale of the troops. They now felt they could beat the British Army. And from that point on, it was all uphill. And Washington embraced Tom Paine. Tom Paine returned to Washington's camp, and they became very close friends. Tom Paine was making so much money from his essays, which were selling all over the country. He ordered his printers to send every penny that his essays earned. Every penny went to Congress to buy war material for Washington's army.
Right.
The net result was that when the war was over and we had won, Tom Paine was broke, dead broke. He didn't have a cent. It had all gone to the war effort. And when Washington learned about it, he sent Paine a note saying, "Come on up here to the camp. You can live here at no charge and be my guest." And Tom Paine had to borrow a dollar to get there.
but you know, Harlow, it is so so unique in terms of individuals. I mean, he was really against some formidable opponents, you know, at the time, Great Britain. We had not gained independence yet. And I want to talk further about that, but I just want to take a quick pause and let folks know that they're listening to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. My guest this week is best-selling author and historian Harlow Giles Unger. We're talking about his new book, Thomas Paine and the Clarion Call for American Independence. And I know that's not a household name, but Thomas Paine, as Harlow has been talking about, really was perhaps the original, the makings of what political activism is today. We can probably go back and thank Thomas Paine. And Harlow, some of the things you were talking about, I mean, he's up against, colonies, as you said. They wanted independence. They had worked hard. They toiled the land. Whatever they had, they got through blood and sweat. They certainly didn't want to take orders from Britain. But I also get the sense, especially after finishing your book, that it's quite possible that Thomas Paine was the man or the catalyst for the American Revolution. I mean, let me ask you this. Had there not been Thomas Paine, would we had, chances are we would have gained independence anyway, but did he spearhead this thing?
Absolutely. He rallied, his essays rallied the American people around the cause of independence. George Washington said as much, saying that it's very doubtful if the American people would have gotten behind the independence movement. After all, Americans then, the people on this continent, were British. They were British,
right,
through and through. They went to the Anglican, most of them went to Anglican services every Sunday, and they considered themselves British. They were supported by the British troops who protected them against Indian assaults and squatters and everything else. It's very questionable whether at the beginning of the Revolutionary War, when Congress declared independence, it's questionable whether the majority of the people were for independence. Thomas Paine, after he wrote this fantastic essay called Common Sense, after that was circulated, George Washington said that was responsible for turning the opinions of those who were on the fence around and making independence the most popular political program in the country. He really turned the people around, and he kept up that in intense feeling for independence with a series of 14 essays, each of which he called American Crisis, and numbered them American Crisis 1, 2, etc. And American Crisis 1 was the one that inspired the troops at the Battle of Trenton. It's the famous one that began, "These are the times that try men's souls."
Right.
And it went on to say that the brave, the patriot, the true patriot, will fight for his rights to independence. The subsequent, he wrote, as I say, 14 more essays, and some of them were really just drew laughter across America. There was one that was addressed to the British commanders, military commanders, and it said, "Dear Lord so-and-so, why haven't you conquered us? Who or what has prevented you? You have had every opportunity. Your fleets and armies are the world's largest. They arrived in America without incident. No uncommon fortune has intervened. Why haven't you conquered us?"
Yeah, taunting him, yeah.
Well, it infuriated the British public, and it infuriated Parliament and the King, but it sent Americans doubling over in laughter.
You know, but let me ask you, as you're talking about, I'm thinking, because this is what I've been dying to ask you, the British were, as you said, were incensed. The King on down, Parliament, the British soldiers, the British commanders that took foothold here in this country to try and suppress this beginnings of this uprising. Did anybody try to physically silence this man?
Well, they couldn't. He was over here. He was wanted in Britain and for treason. He had been born in Britain. The British considered him a British subject, and he issued an order for his arrest for treason, and he would have been drawn and quartered, executed,
right,
had he been caught. So, yes, they were really furious at him, but Americans adored him. They just there. And one of the other American Crisis essays that he wrote, he addressed it to the people of England, saying he couldn't understand Parliament's motives for going to war. He said, "You enjoyed America's whole commerce before you began to try to conquer us. The country and commerce were both your own, as they had been for 100 years. What, then, in the name of heaven, would you go to war for?"
Right.
And that was the kind of indisputable pain logic that infuriated the British, who had no answers, and made Americans double over in laughter while firing up their spirits. It was all common sense, as Tom Paine put it.
Through that portion, in I would say the better part of the book, as you explained, talks about this rise of this man that's just coming out of nowhere, and because of these fiery words and his inspiration, he urges the colonies to unite and motivates them. The Battle of Trenton was certainly a prime example of all of that. But the sad part, at least for me, and I think for you as well, because you clearly point that out in the book, is that he reaches this pinnacle, as you said, they revered him here. I mean, in England, they, as you said, they would have killed him, put him on trial, and then killed him. But then he fell out of favor. I mean, he died lonely, no friends around. As you said, he gave a lot of the money away in support of the troops. What caused this fall?
Well, as you say, he rose in the estimation of Americans, so much so that after the war, Congress appointed him the equivalent of a Secretary of State. So he got involved in foreign affairs of this country. After the war, was an important political figure and still beloved. Then he heard that the French Revolution had broken out, and he joined Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson in Paris and helped write the first constitution in French history in support of the French Revolution. So he was a very popular figure, both in France and in America. And then this madman, a lawyer, French lawyer, Robespierre, took power over the French Revolution and had Paine arrested for opposing Robespierre's motion to have the king executed, the French king executed. Obviously, Paine lost, and Paine was arrested. In prison, he started writing another book called The Age of Reason, which really tore churches apart and pointed out all the discrepancies of the Bible, and it was an anti-church document that really upset churchgoers and churchmen, obviously, across much of the Western world, so much so that when he returned to America later in life after the French Revolution was over, he was snubbed by most political figures, with the exception of Thomas Jefferson, who by then was president. And like Paine, Thomas Jefferson was an outspoken deist. In other words, he did not believe in Christianity. He did not believe in churches or anything else. He believed in God, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But besides Jefferson and Franklin and a couple of other major figures like Governor Clinton of New York, very few Americans were deists, and they really ignored Paine. Paine settled down on his farm. New York State had given him a farm as a gift after the Revolutionary War. He settled there, and someone, never been identified, tried to assassinate him. A bullet ran through. He was reading in his living room, and a bullet went through his window and just barely missed him. And he towards the end of his life, he was simply ignored because of his deist beliefs. And that really is why no one wanted to be associated with deism.
Yeah. It's amazing that somebody who rises to a level where his words were you know widely read throughout the world. In today's world, that you know you'd be a figure that instantaneously garnered tremendous appeal or in disdain, I suppose, depending on what side of the fence you were on. But then to you know for the things that he did, the inspirations that he caused, and because of his deep-rooted beliefs. Was shunned in the later in life, just kind of lived out his life as a lonely man.
He's still being shunned, and you won't find much mention of him in high school American history books because, first of all, there's the growth of evangelism in this country, evangelistic Christian, and they just won't permit his words to be read by high school students, so he is still anathema to churchmen and political leaders who depend on churchmen to be for election.
You know, and it smacks in the it echoes in your mind that we're so open minded today, but you know Harlow it points out that we're not as open minded as we believe we are because this man after 200 years he's been gone is shunned for beliefs back then that still resonate with people today.
And it's not just his beliefs. There are new false beliefs that are taking precedence. I mean, the Vice President of the United States today and the former Attorney General say that this we started out as a Christian nation, and we did not.
Right.
In fact, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, all say they absolutely abnegated everything to do with religion. They separated church and state, and the Vice President is just wrong. But that belief has grown across America that we started out as a Christian nation, and we did not. Indeed, John Adams said in no uncertain terms, and put his signature to this statement: "We are not the United States are not a Christian nation in any sense of the word."
I think the best thing for people to do then is to get the truth of the matter is to read Harlow's book, Thomas Paine and the Clarion Call for American Independence. Harlow, if people want to just perhaps research your background, the works that you've done, all the great books that you've written, or just outreach you directly, how may they do that?
Well, I have a website, harlowungerbooks.com, that they can go to, I think that's probably the best way to get a hold of me.
And this most recent book, the one we've been talking about, Thomas Paine and the Clarion Call for American Independence, is now widely circulated in bookstores across the country.
Absolutely, and online at thomaspainebook.com.
Perfect. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. I certainly welcome that. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I also welcome that. That's at Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. Again, I want to thank my guest this week, best-selling author and historian Harlow Giles Unger. The book is Thomas Paine and the Clarion Call for American Independence. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Harlow, still there?
Yeah.
Great job. I know you framed it good. I mean, how this guy got to where he got in an age when it was just a written word, because I think a lot, you're exactly right. I mean, people have a misbelief because of, they don't read enough history, and you think, well, geez, if we're not reading it now, who the hell was reading back then? But obviously, because it was the only form of communication, people did read, and they read. It sounds like they read fervently. I was a little impressed myself. I thought, Jesus, tens of thousands of people, could that many people even read? But obviously, they could.
Well, not only that, it was the one of the only forms of entertainment, public speaking, and